Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Howdy, hour number two, coming to you live from the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio, who understands it's not just a mortgage, but it's your mortgage. That's the difference. Rocket Mortgage, push button. Get mortgage here on this Football Friday, also a Baseball Friday. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM 206, radio.com, YouTube, just type in Tiki and Tierney. A lot of ways to figure us out. Instagram, all that stuff, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney, at Tiki and Tierney, obviously the show account. And when you hop on there, you'll find our poll question. And it says, despite a perfect 6-0 start, the Pats look a little vulnerable. Do you still view them as the best team in the NFL right now? What do you think the voting for? Yes, I haven't voted, neither is Tiki, but percentage-wise, yes right now.
60% yes.
Close. 54% say yes. So there's still a lot of evaluation. There's also some haters mixed in there that
true,
no matter what, we're going to say that.
But
or the other way, I'm going
to
say no.
It's, you know, who do we talk to? Danny Cannell. We talked to Danny Cannell about Clemson because he does his rankings every year, college football rankings, and he still has Clemson up there number one. He's like, I just have the philosophy where if you're the reigning champion, until you like really mess up, because we all know that Clemson got very close, really a two-point conversion away from losing to North Carolina.
Mac Brown.
Exactly. Mac's going to – he's made at least a on-field cultural change down there in North Carolina. But until you like really mess up and lose, I still got to keep you there. And that's where the Patriots are, I think, in a lot of people's minds.
Fair enough. We'll do a little college football right around 4:40 or so. The Red River rivalry, obviously, some big games. Tiki's crew's playing tonight. You guys are underdogs.
I know. But it's on the road.
How are you underdogs against Miami?
I mean, the only thing I can figure, so I was down there last week for the Virginia Tech game, and it was hot as hell, BT. It was a 3:30 kickoff. It was a four-hour game. So it ended at like 7:20 something. At 7:20, it was 80 degrees. It was hot. And so.
No, you guys aren't coming from the Pacific Northwest. You're coming from Virginia.
But Virginia's kind of like here. So it's like 50s, maybe 60s. And it's been like that for, three or four weeks. You go on the road to a team that has a really good defense. Mm-hmm. It wasn't their defense that lost in the game last week to Tech. It was the five turnovers in the first half, and then a couple in the second as well. I think they had seven in total, or seven sacks they had. But it's the attrition that's going to happen throughout the game that you worry about, the cramping.
Mm-hmm.
If Bryce Perkins goes down,
I'm explaining
why. The number, what are they, 20 right now? Or 18?
I think you guys are inside the top 20.
Number 18 ranked team is going on the road to play a 2-3 team, and they're an underdog.
Are you going
to
win tonight?
That's why. I think we're winning tonight.
Boy. All right, so that's what I was getting at. So let's get to this now. You know, no surprise, we both said, and listen, great season by the Rays, too. Let's get that out of the way.
Yeah, right. Agreed.
Yeah, you know, devout Rays fans are sitting here saying, if they're watching us, great season, we're done. I hear you, but you have to view it through the prism of common sense is the right word, but realistic expectations.
All you got to do is look at the census.
Look at the roster. That's probably the way
roster
to do it.
And salary.
And Gerrit Cole, who was on the Hill last night. True. Who was once again absolutely filthy. Now, the Astros, forget about the Astros, just more big picture. I was thinking about this morning. And, back in the day, right when the steroid surge was happening, and a lot of us were naive early to it. I wasn't even in the media. I was in high school. I was in college.
Yep.
But those in the media were very naive to it, or they just chose to overtly ignore it.
Yep.
Those in the commissioner's office overtly ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
We're making money. The game's thriving. We'll look the other way. And that obviously is what it is, and it was what it was. But now, when there's a home run explosion, and we saw it this year, Pete Alonso smashed 53, rookie record, breaking Aaron Judge's record. The Yankees and the Twins both had over 300. The Twins had 308. The Yankees had 307. It's been 7 or 8 straight years of home run totals in terms of the entire league jumping.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep hearing about, the seams are different. The ball's juiced. How come we're not? And I'm not assigning any level. And I'll back this up, but I don't want to. I want you to talk. I'm not assigning any level of culpability. I'm not casting full aspersions. I'm asking the question, How come nobody wonders why Garrett Cole suddenly strikes out 15 people every single night? How come nobody wonders about that?
I mean,
you can wonder about all these home runs. Nobody wonders about Garrett Cole.
Well, I think there's an excuse for the home runs that who brought it up? McCarthy, right? Who do we have on?
Tim McCarver.
Brought it up.
It's about 2 weeks ago. Good spot if you want to find that he was good.
And he said, look, the bats are harder. The ball's harder.
Uh-huh.
So there's some excuses for hitters.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Non-steroid excuses.
Agreed.
For hitters.
I agree.
And so we kind of gloss over it. Why you would gloss over, you know, this surge, I guess, career surge for Garrett Cole. I would say, personally, just from looking at the dude, he's a linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
He's 6'4". He's 225. He's enormous. And generally, big players like that, they don't decline. In fact, they get that old man strength. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, it's he's learned the nuances of pitching. He's because he's so big and so strong and so powerful. He's always going to throw gas. Right, even when he's 37 years old, he's going to be probably hitting 96 miles an hour.
Like Clemens. Although Clemens
was.
Juice, but like Clemens' body type.
Exactly, it's the same kind of body type.
No
it's
doubt.
It's like he's huge, and mm-hmm. So
big boy.
You look at him and you start seeing the numbers, and maybe you have a little bit of a question in the back of your mind, like, oh, maybe he's doing a little something. But then you like stand next, you're like, nah, okay, I get it. You're just big.
Mm-hmm.
So
he was also big in Pittsburgh.
True,
but he doesn't do this.
But he had learned how to pitch.
Well, then that's very fair.
And there's something this Astros staff, pitching coach and AJ Hinch, they're ahead of the curve.
Uh-huh.
They're finding ways to make elite pitchers already. Verlander is one, and obviously Cole we're talking about now, do things that you thought they couldn't,
mm-hmm.
Right? We thought Verlander was done.
Watch Greinke next season.
I know, right?
He's just got to get indoctrinated. Right.
He's not a power pitcher, so maybe, but the spin rate can help him for sure.
That's what I mean.
Right?
Yeah.
But when you have the discrepancy, when you have the, and you talk about this all the time, when you can throw 97, 98, and then you can spin it and at 88 or 82, because
mm-hmm.
as Verlanders want to do sometimes,
yeah.
Who the hell's hitting that?
Nobody. It's called pitch variance,
exactly.
Which is why it's so. That's why the changeup is the most effective pitch in baseball. Okay, again, I am not saying at all. I'm not even remotely because you know me. If I thought, I'd just say it.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
That's not how I don't. That's not me on the radio. If I believe something, I'll say it. I don't believe he's taking steroids. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm getting at all. Years ago, there was a guy, take a little nerdy baseball journey. I know you don't know this, and you'll appreciate this.
Go ahead.
There was a guy named Mike Scott, all right,
okay.
Who used to pitch for the Mets, came up in 1979.
Not the former Cavalier who is currently a bench player for the Philadelphia 76ers.
No, not that, who got into a fight.
I did.
With Eagle fans, not that guy. No, not Mike Scott. So Mike Scott comes up, 1970. Now, Mets were horrendous, right? He just kind of drifted. He, what was their Triple-A Philly, whatever their Philly, Tidewater.
Mm-hmm.
He'd go back and forth, Tidewater, the Mets. He was pretty much a starter, but then he'd do a little relief. He really wasn't good at all. He was 14-27 with a 4.64 ERA with a whip of almost 1.5. And in 360-plus innings with the Mets, he had 150 strikeouts. When I tell you a complete non-entity where you got his baseball card, you throw it out. And that's when you're 9 years old, you're excited for every card. You're like, I got Mike Scott. I don't want Mike Scott. Scott, what the hell do I would do with this guy? Right? Then he goes to the Astros. And his fourth year in Houston, after a few better years than the Mets, but mm-hmm. still not dominant, he strikes out 306 batters.
Wow.
306.
Maybe there's something in the water down there in Houston.
No, he was scuffing the baseball.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he really was. In 275 innings, his ERA was 2 change. He won the Cy Young. I remember, matter of fact, I was coming back from basketball practice, and I was in eighth grade, and we were walking past a bar, obviously way too young, even mm-hmm. in Brooklyn. You know, maybe if you were in ninth grade, we would have gotten in back then. And I remember I was with my friend Pat and Timmy, and they were Mets fans, and we were peering through the window, and Mike Scott is pitching game one of the NLCS that night against Dwight Gooden. Mike Scott beat Dwight Gooden 1-0. Mike Scott had 15 strikeouts that night against the Mets lineup, which is one of the best teams I've ever seen all time, the 86 Mets. Hernandez, Gary Carter, Darryl, Mookie, Dykstra. And they were incredible, right? So the point being, Mike Scott went from a nobody to one of the most, at least for that period, one of the most transcendent pitchers in the history of baseball. Garrett Cole's ascension is different.
Yeah.
Former first overall pick. numbers that were very good in Pittsburgh, but nothing that remotely touched this.
Yeah.
And I just asked the question, is it really truly all spin rate? I'm just asking.
It's not all spin rate, BT, but so we hit the physical side of it. He's just a monster. He's a beast. And guys that size don't slow down or lose it as quickly as smaller players. Mike Hampton is a perfect example.
Great example.
I know he came up a couple days ago and we were talking about, I just remember Mike Hampton because I met him a few times when I was playing. He was here.
Yep,
he was and so he just, he's a great guy. Yep. So I just,
he could hit a little bit too.
He did.
He was a good
hitter. But he sticks in my head when you brought him up. I was like, why are you bringing up Mike Hampton? But anyway, so it stuck in my head.
All right.
He was a small guy because I remember it's like, he's my size.
Yeah, small but tough.
Yep. So we talk about the size issue. The other thing is that guys don't care about striking out.
That's a big part of it. Keep going.
Right? The stats are ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And it really, if you're a purist, depressing about how many strikeouts. In 2013, BT, and this is already elevated from the early 2000s, the strikeout number of strikeouts in MLB was just under 37,000.
Okay.
Just under. This season is almost 43,000.
That's depressing.
Exactly.
What year was it? What would say?
2013, so 6 years
Mike,
ago.
Mike, what was it in 1970?
That's a good
bunting, little second baseman slapping it.
Just under 37,000 6 years ago till this year, 43,000 Ks.
Okay, all right. So 6,000 more Ks. 6,000
more.
I mean, that's a lot.
1,000 more Ks. Gone up every year. Hey. So basically 1,000 more Ks per season for the last 6 years.
By the way, 22,000 in 1970.
Wow.
So 1970 was good job on that, guys. Thank you. 1970 was 22,000. 3 years ago was 36,000.
No, 6 years ago.
6 years ago,
37,000.
Was 37. Now it's 43.
Now it's 43.
Look at that. Listen, I knew that you would volley that back, and I was hopeful, and I knew that you were because you followed this now for sure. It's a great retort, and it's a plausible response. That very well might be the answer, but I guess it's less about Cole. And more about just, it's almost like we give pitchers a pass.
Yeah.
Like we don't even probe into
you're right.
Why somebody's gotten so much better.
Yeah, you're right.
But it's not a spin rate. He found a better way to spin the ball.
But there's also
what
not
the hell does that mean?
There's also not a ton of examples like this. I mean, the reason those numbers are pertinent is because in 2013, Gerrit Cole was a rookie. And that's when he was figuring
first
it out.
First overall pick.
Exactly. So now 2017, he's kind of gotten it. Mm-hmm. 6 years later. And he's moved to the Astros, which is a non-quantifiable advantage.
Uh-huh.
But it's certainly one because guys are turning into beasts when they get to Houston. And obviously, the point they win World Series 2 years ago.
Plus, they catch the ball, so
and
there's
they
no
catch
waste
the ball.
Outs.
They're studs, right? Even if they get behind, you know that lineup is going to find a way to score runs, just as they always do. So, I mean, maybe I think it's a combination of a lot of things. It's the fact that guys are swinging for the fence. So the strike. So if you have a if you can throw a high fastball, right, and guys just can't go get it at 97 miles an hour, they're going to swing at it, and they're going to miss it, and you're going to up your strikeout rate. Secondly, he's a horse. He's 6'4", 225.
Yeah.
And he's got
a nasty deuce.
He's got a nasty curve, exactly. And he's in Houston, where they are teaching something that some other teams aren't teaching.
It is amazing, though, that the other example played for the Astros.
That's right.
Mike Scott.
That's right.
You know?
It's unreal.
Oh, my God. Now, I don't know that this is necessarily reflective of anything, but he used to be in the National League with the Pirates. Mm. So wouldn't you say, based on the pitcher, now pitchers don't go deep, so they might get 2 at-bats a game at that. Yeah. But that's still over the course of you make 30 starts, you face the pitcher 2 times, it adds up a little bit. So could it be 40, 50, 60 more whiffs? Yeah, it can. So that hasn't been offset by his movement to the American League.
No, he's actually gotten better.
Gotten far better. A little mystifying, and I am a little curious if anybody's thought about this. 1-855-212-4227. I just feel like we're unfair to hitters, and pitchers historically and perennially get a pass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mike Scott didn't get a full pass because it was largely thought, I remember, that guys would actually call for the ball and they would look for scuff marks. That was different. But how many pitchers... I know there's a lot of hitters who do this. How many pitchers go from good to all-time dominant? I mean, it's a relatively small list. All right, coming up next, in addition to that, if you wanted to weigh in, any theories, we'd love to hear them. The Astros and the Yankees. Could be the best championship matchup in terms of the league championship series maybe in a decade or so. Can the Yankees win? Not many people giving the Yankees a chance. Can the Yankees win? We'll do that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Great news. There's a quick way to save a little money. Just switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. We'll do a little more baseball here. Coming up next segment, college football. Is this a must-win for Tom Herman and the Horns? Don't go Horns down. God forbid. Have a little fun with the rivalry. Don't go Horns down. 15-yard
penalty.
Penalty. You know, when I like to do this with League Championship Series and certainly World Series for sure, by an extension of that. You go and you find this on baseballreference.com. Go and find some box scores, right? And just pick a random year, whatever it might be, and look at how many of the players from the box scores are in the Hall of Fame.
For the championship series and the World Series.
Yeah, really a nice barometer in terms of That's trying to sense historically just how cool the matchup could be.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this Yankees-Astros matchup, and while I think the Astros are the better baseball team, and I've said that all summer, you know, you look at some of the names and some of the players here. Granted, many are still in their relative infancy. Somebody like Gleyber Torres is a kid. Aaron Judge has to stay healthy, do it for a few more years, but he's on the trajectory. You've got a few players on the Astros, Altuve, obviously Verlander, see where Cole goes. I mean, you know, it's the Correa's got to get his act together. He's actually been hurt last couple of years. He's been a little disappointing personally. But this is the kind of World Series, or pardon me, the championship series that historically can leave a real imprint. The difference, though, is that the Yankees don't have that one legendary ace taking the mound.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the one that you would fit into your narrative that's going to be in the Hall of Fame, and if they move on to the World Series, you'd say, oh, that's the guy, would be CeCe.
Sure, but like in 09 when
exactly,
we played the Phillies.
But CeCe is not even, I mean, we don't even know if he's going to be on the roster because of his health of his pitching shoulder.
Yep.
So it doesn't even fit, even though that's the one that would be highlighted down the line. But Verlander is, and, you know, Altuve, I mean, he's certainly headed there, just the way, unless he just falls off the face of the earth, which I don't see happening for Jose Altuve.
Project right. Bregman in 5 years. Bregman, if he keeps this up, he's on a great trajectory.
I agree. I mean, this is the matchup.
This is a heavyweight fight right here
that everybody wanted to see. And you went into the break teasing whether or not the Yankees had a chance. Of course they do, because they can get off the bat. Even though they're on the road, they can steal one on the road in Houston because Greinke is pitching, and we know his last outing wasn't a great one.
No, 3 2/3 got smashed.
Exactly, and they ended up scoring 10 runs in that game. The Rays ended up scoring 10 runs in that game, 3. So, yeah, absolutely. The Yankees can have a confidence-building game. They've been sitting for, 5 days already because they swept the Twins, and of course they can.
It's a little too long for my taste.
Meaning the sitting.
I don't like languishing for 5 full days.
But for the Yankees, who have been nothing but beat up,
that's true.
That's actually probably a good thing.
That's good for Gary Sanchez. That's true.
There's definitely
some guys that can, you know, Didi coming back midseason from the Tommy John. Not the worst. Didi Gregorius, shortstop. Not the worst thing in the world. You know, get that thing on ice for a couple days and not throw for a day or two. No, that's a good point. That's fair.
And mashers don't, I mean, they don't go cold, right?
Well,
and especially because it's like the whole lineup, but even you know,
everybody on both teams hits.
I
mean, everybody could take you 400 and something feet.
That's right.
Every single guy,
even Brett Gardner, who's
20 plus home runs this year.
I know it. He's just a small old guy. He still goes yard.
Yeah, he does. I think he had 23. He had a ton. You know, as much as I agree, obviously, of course, the Yankees can win the series, and there's a ray of light in game one. But this could work the other way, too, because in their minds, they're probably thinking, I'm not going to say it, they might be thinking what you just said. Hey, we avoid Verlander, game one. We avoid Cole, game one. Let's get to Greinke. You know, didn't look good the other night. 3 2/3. He's not as good as, even though he's good, he's not as good as the other guys. What happened if Greinke comes out and spins a gem?
Yeah.
He's still capable of doing that.
Of course he is.
And the Yankees do have a propensity to swing and miss a lot. So if Zach Greinke delivers a big-time performance, as much as it could be fuel coming into the series, not facing the top two pitchers for Houston, it could be a little bit of a burden if Greinke spins you in circles and he dominates you. Now you're in the hole, and now you've got to face the two studs
in
succession.
That's true. I mean, I think I think
game one's big.
It's big. It's exciting. You have the historical, you know, behemoth and the Yankees versus the current, like, best team in baseball, put that in quotes, with the Houston Astros, who just every position. It's the matchup you wanted to see. The other matchup is I don't know if it's less interesting, but it's more compelling in a sense. It probably is less interesting to people because we don't. We had this conversation yesterday or even 2 days ago about the Nationals and how we don't know it, you know, other than, you know, Rendon and Soto. It's like, and Scherzer and Strasburg. It's like the rest of the squad after the top, they're top heavy in stars. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, all right, who? We didn't expect them to be here. And the Cardinals, they're a Midwest team that have a history of greatness. But nobody expected them to be here either, so it's a little bit different.
I never rule the Cardinals out.
You
the
can't.
Cardinals, the Cardinals are almost like the Patriots.
You can't.
Even when you don't think they're
good. They're not winning championships, though. They're always good.
That's harder to win it, but you got to win so many more games in baseball.
True.
And by the way, do you agree with what I just said that? Do you actually agree that it's harder to win
only because it is.
World Series
without
than it is? I mean, think of it. You get a first-round bye. You got to play divisional, conference championship, go to Super Bowl, win.
Because the Super Bowl is the path is easier if you're elite during the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's because you're getting a team that likely, you know, got in with 9-7, mm-hmm. sometimes 8-8. Mm-hmm. Talking about the NFL.
No, I know what you mean.
And they mess around and win the wild card game. Now you're getting like this mid level team playing the best team. Like the seeding is mm-hmm. the seeding benefits a team like the Pats, who are going to go 13-3 or 14-2 every season and have to play that wild card winner, the wild card winner in the divisional round.
Yep.
And then
home.
You're kind of like automatically in the championship game.
At home. Again, probably.
Exactly.
In all probability.
Whereas in baseball, you got to go on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're the best, you win 115 games. You still got to go on the road for part of this series at some point. So, yeah, it is definitely harder.
Yeah,
in baseball.
I think that's a fair statement. There's just, you know, again, I said this yesterday on the show. There's so much randomness in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to prove. You could go and look at the list of champions in every sport. You could literally point to the champion, but we could have a debate. Is that truly the best team based on what we saw during the regular season? And you'd probably do it a lot more in baseball than you would in football.
Yeah.
Because there's length. There's, you know, 5-game series, 7-game series. And a lot of times you have to get lucky. Like, now the Yankees get a little, I'll put quotes around break, facing Greinke, not the other two studs in game one. But, you know, a lot of times some of these teams don't have three stars. That three ace, they've got two. If you're lucky, you might have like the one ace and then the one really good certifiable second or 1A or two. And sometimes if that team is locked up in a 7-game series or a 5-game series before, or 7 games to get to the World Series, their rotation is so out of whack, you face their fourth starter in game one.
That's right.
And so, you know, you're not going to see that. Like, the Pats aren't going to go, and Brady's never going to not start the game if he's healthy.
That's right.
You know, so it's definitely crazy. Astros fans, that's a tough place to play. It's a little bit of a quirky ballpark, a little bit in dimensions. You know, the Yankee Stadium porch is obviously short. The gaps are wide. Yankees bullpen superior. Yankees catch the baseball better than people thought, but the Astros are the better defensive team. Both teams are very well managed. Both teams have recent championship for the Yankees.
Yeah.
Pedigree. I mean, this has to go 6 or 7. I don't see it being a short series either way.
Let's hope so.
All right, let's get Jay Berman's update. After that, Teak, we've got a little college football. The Red River rivalry, a little LSU, Florida. And here's a question for you, and I think it's a good one. Does Herman have to win the game? Does he have to win the game? Look at where they are. You know where they're trying to go. Does he have to win the game? We'll get to that coming up after Jay's update, which is right now. Here's Jay.
Sunday, the NFL on CBS features a full slate of games. Some good ones here. Brady. That's an old one. Why am I reading week 5? Brady and the Pats in Washington. That wouldn't be the one. I'm just staring over here, Diso. What do you want me to read here? It's the one that was in my folder, buddy.
Yes.
That's the CBS read.
Well, just pick a CBS
game. We
got big
games on CBS coming up. We always have big games.
There's always big games on CBS.
Good.
Dallas versus the Jets.
I'm going to be at the game.
You're going to the game. Denver.
It's the first Jets game I've been since. It's the first football game that I will be attending since Candlestick Mm-hmm. And the Coliseum when we lived in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I work every Sunday since 2013.
Houston.
I can't wait to go.
Denver taking on the Tennessee Titans, and more importantly, the biggest game on CBS this weekend. Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Houston Texans.
Tyreek Hill looks like he's going to play.
Yeah, you're right.
We'll get the full slate on CBS. We'll give you the official stuff later.
Catch it all.
Good catch. I appreciate that.
Only on CBS.
Only on CBS. So you have Romo and Big Jim Nance going to MetLife to watch that. I think the Jets are going to play well. Sam Darnold's definitely going to play. And listen, Dallas, a little something to prove. Two shaky performances. We'll get to that a little later in the show. We'll make our picks. 5 Eastern.
They might be in mine.
Yeah? Dallas or the Jets? I know you. Well, first of all, you usually make mistakes. So whatever you're thinking, I should probably say, although you're coming off a good week, I would say don't divulge yet.
I won't.
I don't think you would lay the 7 with Dallas or the 7. If anything, if you did latch on to that game, I think you might take the points and roll with the Jets.
All right, we'll see.
We'll find out. All right. Texas and Oklahoma.
Yep.
One of the great rivalries. By the way, I remember with the Texas State Fair, which is right there at the Cotton Bowl. I have one of the coolest. I got to bring this picture in at some point. So this is years ago. I was with ESPN. Jen was still working for ESPN, and we weren't even married yet. And it was the day, the Friday before before this game, the Red River rivalry. And the Texas State Fair is right next to the Cotton Bowl.
Oh, cool!
So we had our ESPN, door sensors or whatever we had. So I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta get on the field too. Might be doing a little work here tomorrow. We're the only people that. Well, I mean, a couple people let us in. The only people in the whole Cotton Bowl stadium.
That's pretty cool.
In the stands, and we got one of the workers to take a picture of us. This is a fun game. The question is this a must-have game for Tom Herman? Not just in the context of this season, but in building the program. What do you think? Building the program.
Well, I mean, it's been a couple years now since he's been at the Texas, the helm of the Texas Longhorns.
Season number three.
And we always give coaches who are supposed to build up a program a little bit of leeway. I think in Texas, it's starting to get to the point where they want this to happen now. And if he falters against this Oklahoma team, because they are as good as they have been, meaning Oklahoma is as good as they have been the last couple of years, they don't miss a beat when their quarterbacks get drafted number one overall after winning the Heisman Championship. Jalen Hurts comes in and he looks like, 3 times the magnitude that he ever was at Alabama.
Well, suddenly he's a first-round, very distinct first-round possibility.
I can't believe people are actually talking about that, but it's true. The way he's playing, the way he's carrying this Oklahoma team. So if Texas loses this game, I don't think it's a death knell to the perception of Coach Herman.
I agree with that.
However, if they win this game, Oklahoma has been dominating every team that they've played this year, it's huge for him. It legitimizes everything that's gone bad the last couple of years. And look, it shouldn't even be good yet. He doesn't have his full class in yet. He's only been there for 3 years, his third year. He doesn't have a full class of his recruits and his influences on his team yet. But if they beat Oklahoma, it puts them on a different stratosphere and maybe even puts them in the conversation, despite their early season loss to LSU. But that loss looks fantastic after LSU through 6 weeks, back into the college football playoff conversation as well. I mean, if they go find a way to win the Big 12, which is difficult because you probably end up having to play Oklahoma again the way that the Big 12 is laid out because there's no divisions. This could be enormous for Texas, which is why this game is must watch if you're a college football fan.
Pardon me, Teague. No question. This is going to be a lot of fun. And Herman is 0-2 against the Sooners as head coach here. I mean, it's been a minute. I mean, really, the end of Mack Brown's tenure was not very, very fruitful. He had a 5-win season in 2010. And then they jump back up to 8-5, but that's not acceptable by Texas standards, obviously. 9-4, nobody wants that in Austin still. Then the next year, 8-5. Then you get to Charlie Strong, and it's a different presence. It's a different feel. It's just a different vibe. Actually, it got worse. I mean, Charlie, 6 wins, 5 wins, 5 wins. And then here comes Tom Herman, and right away, he gets to a bowl this first season. I think it was the Texas Bowl. It wasn't a high-profile one because he only went 7-6. But he got there, and he won the bowl game. Then the next year, he wins double figures, 10 games. They win the Sugar Bowl, which is nice. And here they are, 4-1. And as you pointed out, a loss that looks pretty damn good right now, nestled inside the top 10. This is absolutely, we can look back. I can't prove this now, but circle this game. Because like Harbaugh and his inability to beat Urban Meyer, mm-hmm. it's not just about getting Texas to back to the pinnacle of college football, but it's also about beating Oklahoma once in a while, which helps get you back there.
That's right.
You know, you don't want to go 0-3. If you not that it's the end of the world, and not that it fully stifles their momentum, which is palpable. Their quarterback Ellinger is good.
Mm-hmm.
He can run.
He's gotten better every year,
and he can throw. He is legit. If they win this game, you're going to circle it. I'm going to say that's the game where, in my opinion, Texas suddenly became far more viable for the 5-star recruits.
That's right.
I think it changes a lot of opinions.
Yeah, because a lot of those Texas recruits, they end up going to Oklahoma. It's a shared recruiting ground.
And, state right above right? it, not too far.
They want to go where you have a chance to play for and compete for a national championship. Where currently, if you're in the Big 12 or in Big 12 country, meaning those are the teams you look up to, and those are the teams you're likely to go to if you're a star, 5-star, 4 or 5-star in Texas. It's Oklahoma right now. Texas hasn't been on that radar. It's now back to there. And if they beat Oklahoma, it's bragging rights. It's we're moving in the right direction. Yeah, they're still good, but we're moving to catch them. Do you want to be a part of an established, like, whatever brand, or you want to be part of this thing and be part of it when it takes over Oklahoma? It's a salient and like strong selling point to young kids. Be a part of something that's building as opposed to something that's already got a solid foundation.
But let me ask you, I mean, that sounds good. It takes a special young man to embrace that challenge. You know, not everybody is willing to roll. I don't care if you're a 5-star or not. I mean, not everybody's willing to roll up the sleeves and you know, brick by brick, rebuild the power.
Yep.
Some people like parachuting in. Some players like parachuting in.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? We won the championship last year. We won 11 games. Whatever it might be. Not everybody's built for that rocky road, that jagged edge.
True, but he's starting to get some top recruiting classes. Top three the last couple of years.
Yep.
They're currently 5 for the future the next year. So, and that's going to change, obviously. They'll find a 5-star somewhere, especially if they win this game. So, for Texas, I think Texas has so much to gain by winning this game. I think if Oklahoma loses, they're still going to be on the path because they'll get a chance, as long as they don't falter again, to get a revenge game against Texas, just like it happened a couple years ago. And so, this game is compelling for so many different levels. Recruiting, one that we've been talking about, you know, two, just bragging rights, but three, the national championship conversation is going to hinge a lot on this game.
Mm-hmm.
The Big 12 has had a representative the last 3 years. Whoever wins this game is going to be in the catbird seat to get it.
Let me ask you, do you think Lincoln Riley, or not if, when do you think he begins to test the waters of the NFL?
I think,
and I ask for a reason, which I'll get to.
I'm going to say at least 2 more seasons, not counting this one.
Okay,
at least 2 more seasons, not counting this one. And you know why?
Why?
Because he wants to see if what Cliff Kingsbury has brought to the Arizona Cardinals is viable.
That's
work? Because Lincoln Riley, just like Cliff Kingsbury, is not going to make that jump to the NFL and all of a sudden say, oh, I'm going to do traditional drop back passing.
It's
not what he knows.
No.
You know? So he's either going to stay or he's going to see evidence that it's working. We're already seeing it, you know, trend that way, and he's going to jump on it because it's a huge opportunity if it should come to fruition that way.
Now, I asked you that for a reason. I agree. I might have even said 3 or 4 years. I think he's going to be there for a little bit. I don't sense the immediate jump or even near immediate jump to the NFL, which makes this game even more important for Herman. Because think about it, the longer you go without beating them, the longer Lincoln Riley holds that over your head in recruiting, the wider the gap, the disparity gets. It doesn't get tighter, even if you lose by a point. That does Tom Herman no good. Now, people, listen, Oklahoma's supposed to win this game.
Yeah.
But in terms of the recruits and in terms of the immediate perception around Texas, I think it would be different than the national perception. If we flip off that game and the Longhorns lose 37-33, we're walking away impressed. Like, man, Herman really is what we thought. That trajectory is positive. The forward momentum is undeniable. They're good to go.
That's right.
But in terms of actually that intimacy of the Sooners and with Riley, it doesn't do him any good.
No.
Eventually, you got to beat him.
Yeah, you do. And, I mean, the only thing that you would add is that for Lincoln Riley to jettison and go to the NFL mm-hmm. is if he stops getting the quarterbacks. Right?
But why would he stop?
I don't think he will. And there's already a kid on his roster, Tanner Mordecai, who is supposed to be the next guy, who's a freshman right now. So if he stops getting that guy, like those kids,
mm-hmm.
then that's when he probably thinks. But I don't think he's going to stop getting those kids.
No.
Because he's already proven that he's the whisperer for him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's got the ultimate trump card.
That's
right?
A great job. It's a great job.
Come to me. I'll help you win a Heisman Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's unconventional, you're going to be the number one draft pick in the NFL.
What do you think of the three best jobs in college football?
Oklahoma's one for sure.
Encompassing visibility, encompassing
well, think about
facilities,
yeah,
reputation, legacy, booster, like the whole package.
I got to tell you, LSU is climbing.
All right, so you're going to go LSU's on the list
mainly
there.
Because of the facilities that we just said we've seen all offseason.
Oh, those are incredible.
You know, we talk about their new offensive scheme, mm-hmm. and so quarterbacks, we had this conversation a week or so ago, BT. It's all about the quarterback. You got to get that guy who's just a stud, right? And LSU for years couldn't get him.
No.
Right? I mean, yeah, they had good players, but they couldn't get that. They couldn't get the guy,
mm-hmm.
and now they have Joe Burrow who transferred.
They did have the first overall pick, but Russell was different.
True,
Russell was just it was a projected specimen who threw the football 73 yards on a fly.
He was a massive
yep.
person.
Nope,
he looked like the part, but he didn't. He clearly didn't work.
No.
So
LSU's on your list.
LSU's on my. Oklahoma's got to be on the list simply because of the recruiting area
mm-hmm.
that they command mm-hmm. Because of their success.
But that's compromised when Texas is really good.
It is.
Because in state.
But they still got to beat them. They still got to beat
them. Oh, no, there's no question. I'm just saying big picture. Because think about it. Like when Texas football is nationally fertile in
yep.
terms of like championship viability, the Sooners lose out on guys that go to Texas.
Yeah. By the way, they did beat them. They beat them 2 years ago.
Herman didn't beat him.
Yeah, he did. They
beat him. The first year?
They beat him. That was the game that. No, was that last year? So, yeah, it was last year. And then Oklahoma won the Big 12 championship, and that's how they got their entree to the college football playoff. So they did beat him because I remember it was Ellinger and who was he beefing with? He was beefing with Baker, even though Baker wasn't there
mm-hmm.
because the year before,
on social media, Baker
yeah, exactly.
did throw some stuff out.
Exactly.
So what's your third school, by the way?
I'm probably gonna go Notre Dame. Probably Notre Dame. Simply because they're consistently going to get elite players because of the Golden Dome. I'd probably say Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you say Notre Dame.
And think about the fan base and like the even if you're not a if you're not a like you know them even if you're not a college football
no question
like fan and if you're in an agnostic area like there's no like Florida or Texas or whatever near you.
Yeah.
You might gravitate to Notre Dame because you see him every week.
For sure. I asked the question because...
And Brian Kelly's done a hell of a job there.
He has done a great job. I asked the question because, you know, and there's no right or wrong answer, obviously, but I would think that the schools that would have a chance to get in your top three would be schools that are in states without a pro football team.
Hmm.
Now, Notre Dame has one.
True.
State of Indiana.
True.
Colts. Not that necessarily changes the entire complexion, but somebody like Oklahoma, I mean, it's Sooners all day.
I wonder, you know, I mean, I would say Alabama, but he's going to stay in that job forever.
It's amazing. He's never leaving.
You're right.
He's never leaving, unless he gets bored. How do you get bored
yeah,
with that?
Like Herman, I could see moving on at some point.
I think this is his dream job.
I think it is, but I could see him moving on.
For the NFL point. Or
for
college?
For the NFL.
Okay. Yeah. yeah.
No,
I can see that too.
Only for the NFL.
Gotcha.
Lincoln Riley, I could also obviously see him going to the National Football League. We just talked about it. Brian Kelly, I would have. Maybe he waited too mm-hmm. long. But if he left and took an NFL job, I would see that. So there,
I can see that too. He's got to do it soon though. He's got
a kid. I thought jobs that would become available.
He Alabama, didn't say USC. When USC's right,
USC hasn't been right for a long time.
But when they are right, they're really right.
Time.
But I hear you. All right, third hour coming up. Get to the NFL. Tiki and Tierney.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.